You're listening to Greater LA. It's KCRW's show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hi, I'm Steve Chiotakis. Police officers have the job of keeping the peace and to prevent and stop crime, a mission of public safety to protect and serve. But where does that mission stand when it comes to the First Amendment guaranteed right to peacefully protest?
Okay, guys, seeing some gas fly or smoke. We're not 100% sure which.
That was the scene last night in Huntsville, Alabama, courtesy of AL.com, where dozens of peaceful protesters had gathered in the downtown area, only to be broken up by police with tear gas and rubber bullets. One officer even said they didn't want to, quote, roll the dice to see if the protest would become violent. And that's been the frustration among people who are guaranteed a right to peacefully protest in this country, only to be met by law enforcement that comes ready for a fight. Robert Harris is an LAPD officer. He's been on the ground for a long time and director on the board of the LAPPL, the Los Angeles Police Protective League, which represents the rank and file of the LAPD. Officer Harris, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
So I want to talk about the LAPD's response to the protests over the past several days. We just heard what happened in Alabama, and tear gas was thrown. People were scattered everywhere. I think the police obviously have this fine line of trying to keep the peace, but at the same time, some people say, hey, look, I just came down here to peacefully protest. Why am I being shot by a rubber bullet? I mean, these are painful injuries. Tear gas isn't pleasant, you know, and if I'm just protesting, why does that need to happen?
Yeah, I from the perspective of a protester who's at the front of the line, who's trying to exercise their First Amendment right to protest in a peaceful manner, I can understand that perception. But the reality is that law enforcement is there to ensure that they can do that peacefully. Unfortunately, what you have are opportunistic individuals, criminal individuals that come in and hijack those peaceful protests and start doing things like launching projectiles at our officers, bricks, frozen water bottles, bottles filled with urine and feces. The destruction of property begins to happen. And once those things start to happen, it's the responsibility of law enforcement to try and control that so that it doesn't spread.
I mean, I've covered the chaotic situations before in 30 years of reporting. So I know what kind of chaos is there. But I wonder, you know, the one thing that we talked about yesterday in policing and police policy is the fact that officers show up with the regalia that looks, you know, that's something akin to going to war. And I wonder if that kind of, you know, regalia only instigates the situation, like, hey, we're here against you and not here to protect you. Do you get my drift?
I understand the perspective, but look, effective leadership requires that you take ownership. When trust is broken, when failure happens, it's up to effective leaders to own that and then try to fix it and resolve it. The criminal element and those that are hijacking those protests, the outcomes of their actions lay solely at their feet. Our officers don't show up to the scene dressed in that regalia because they're looking for a fight. They're showing up because, for example, here in Los Angeles, one of our officers had his skull fractured by a projectile being thrown at him. Now, we don't have a crystal ball, so we don't know when those projectiles are going to come. We don't know when that organized element is going to show up to try and hijack these peaceful protests. So we show up prepared. Showing up prepared is a sign of leadership. It's what we're supposed to do. We're not showing up to look for a fight. We're showing up prepared for when we start taking those rocks and bottles, for when we start getting shot at, and for when we need to try and regain some control at those situations. When you see a protest, I believe it was last night or maybe it was the night before, Los Angeles had a bunch of protests that were completely peaceful. And our officers were there, ready in case anything happened, and nothing did happen.
When you think about the union's position on disciplining those instigators or the rogue officers, do you guys support firing those kinds of officers with complaints against them or histories of violence? I mean, we saw even in Minneapolis, Derek Chauvin had many complaints against him, never disciplined. What do you say to that? And how do you guys, I mean, do you protect those cops or do you say, look, this is bad, you got to go?
I think anytime you want to try to establish credibility, that you have to call balls and strikes. I think that's crucial to keeping trust with the communities. And I think that's why you saw police chiefs and rank and file unions and everybody come out completely disgusted at what we saw with Mr. Floyd and advocating that those officers rightfully be arrested. When it comes to the complaint portion, if you have an officer that has sustained findings of things, then of course we should do that. The complaint in and of itself shouldn't always be the measure of things. I know here in Los Angeles, when I worked down in South Los Angeles, it wasn't uncommon for you to make arrests. And part of that, the community just knew, or at least the ones you know, that we deal with all the time, they knew that if you just filed enough complaints on an officer, that eventually something would happen, whether or not the findings of those complaints were sustained. So I think the conversation really needs to be, you know, how do we ensure that the officers that have these sustained complaints, that we weed out the bad ones? Here in Los Angeles, we have a very robust system set up to track officers and in hopes of finding, you know, those few that are the problem officers so that they can be dealt with appropriately.
Does a union pay for the defense of those officers, though?
Yeah, as a union, it depends. If it's a criminal one, a criminal complaint, then no. But if it is, we do provide representation for the administrative complaints against officers. And I think having a due process right there for officers is appropriate. Everybody should be entitled to the due process. But in the due process, we have to do a better job of communicating that our default position is not to circle the wagons around officers who actions tarnish our profession.
Can we talk about the budget? Mayor Garcetti talking about, obviously, that the city would look to cut now between 100 and $150 million from LAPD, reallocate those funds to invest in programs that support communities of color. This was after he had proposed a 7% spending increase to LAPD with raises, even bonuses in some cases. Do you think the mayor's reversal is fair, considering practically every aspect of city government and schools and fire department will have significant cuts due to a huge loss of revenue with what's happened with this pandemic?
Yeah, so let's start first with the political stunt show that we saw yesterday about the $150 million that he wants to cut from our budget. And I think it's important for your listeners to understand where that came from. So that cutting the department's budget by $150 million came from what is become known as the people's budget. And the people's budget, if people go and look at what that budget actually wants to do, they actually want to cut the LAPD's budget by 90% and remove and take our department from a 10,000 officer department down to about 900. And those dollars that they want cut from the budget have real impacts on public safety, right? It means like longer response times, less officers on the street, our investigations are delayed. It means the less ability to do things that the community and our elected officials have asked for, things like cracking down on human trafficking. And the real problem with that political stunt yesterday was that it was almost designed as political cover. And to put something out that said that they need to cut the budget because the police department is harming our communities does nothing but just try to take the pressure off of our politicians and lay it at the feet of the Los Angeles police officers. And that is not fair.
Why should, you know, the police department be immune to these crazy budget cuts when everything else is being cut? Everything else is being decimated.
My reaction to that would be, then let's have a conversation about that. But that's not what we saw yesterday. What we saw yesterday wasn't city leadership coming to the Protective League to say, hey, how do we move forward and what can we do given the totality of the pandemic on our economy? And then we have a discussion about that. That's not what happened. That's not what they did to us. They gave us no advance warning, no notice. They just launched a press conference, released the memo that said, hey, we want to do this budget cut because the police are harming our communities and our principles and values need to align with our budget. Okay, well, you approved that budget before the Mr. Floyd incident. So are you telling me your principles and values were wrong then? And now you want to try to have political cover for that? and absolve yourself of the responsibility of the budget that you made, and then lay that blame at the feet of the LAPD, that's shameful. It's disgusting. It's not how you conduct yourself as a leader. You know, I don't know if you're aware.
Are you amenable to any cuts
from the department's budget?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we can look at it. And as with every decision you make, you have to evaluate the consequences of those decisions. So let's look at it. If there is a way to do it where we maintain the level of service the community has come to expect, then we would be open to talking about that. If you're talking about just exercising some bits and pieces of the people's budget, which is, part of a political agenda.
Well, everything's a part of a political agenda. I mean, come on. Everything's a part of a political agenda. There, you have a union for a reason, right? I mean, and by the way, a union that exercises amazing clout. So to say that this is all the political, of course it's the political arena, and you guys are a part of it too, right? I mean.
Yeah, and yes, we are part of that arena. And what I would like to see is for us to come together to be solution oriented in how we approach these things. And there's a right way to do that, to build trust and to reach and try to move down the field towards a shared goal. And there's a wrong way to do that. And the way they did it yesterday is the wrong way to do that.
Officer Robert Harris, member of the LAPD and a director on the board of the LAPPL, that's the Los Angeles Police Protective League, the union for the rank and file police officers of the LAPD. Thank you so much. I appreciate your coming on today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Moving on now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiatakis. LA County announced today that there won't be a curfew tonight. Most cities are expected to follow suit. Sheriff Alex Villanueva had already announced that even if there was a curfew, his deputies wouldn't enforce it. Well, last night, the ACLU of Southern California announced an emergency lawsuit challenging the curfews that have been in effect for the last 5 days, which is likely a moot point, as I mentioned today. But we did want to talk about the constitutionality of curfews and why the ACLU would bring suit in the first place. So we asked Ahilan Arulanatham, who's senior counsel there, to come on and talk about it with us. Hi, Ahilan.
Hi, how are you?
I'm okay. No county curfew tonight. Does that mean you're withdrawing your lawsuit?
No, we're not formally withdrawing it. We want to see whether the county's decision sticks. We've only heard of it by tweet so far. But if the county has rescinded its curfew, then we no longer have any problem with the county.
Right, right. If it's a moot point, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. If LA County or any cities decide to move forward either tonight or in the coming days, will you file again, or you're just waiting?
Well, that's one of the reasons to wait. The sheriff had suggested that he saw the curfews as a response to organized protest, and we think that's fundamentally misguided. There's nothing wrong with peaceful political protest, even in very large numbers. And in fact, it's very important at this time because of the police violence and race discrimination issues, which are at the heart of the protests. So if the curfews are imposed in response to that, then we're going to still have a problem and need to sue to protect people's constitutional rights. If they hold off despite the potentially large, organized, peaceful protests that would happen, then we would have no problem.
But at the same time, there are nefarious elements to this stuff, too, like people who take advantage of the peaceful protesters who come in and loot and do property destruction and things like that. Law enforcement had said those curfews were a necessary tool. Can you agree with that?
Well, the law is very clear that the normal response to looting and like lots of other crime is for the police to arrest the people who are looting. And obviously, if there are people coming alongside the protesters or after the protesters and doing property damage for whatever reason they may have, we want the police to stop that. But you only enforce by curfew that's preventively suppressing the lawful political protest of people in order to stop this other crime if that crime is very, very serious. It has to either be actual or threatened mass violence or very widespread property damage that the police cannot control. I think we understand, obviously, that if you own a store in Santa Monica or Wilshire and people come and destroy your store, you're justifiably upset by that. And it is appropriate for the police to try to stop that behavior. But we also have to remember that hundreds of people have been killed by police violence in Los Angeles. So that's also an urgent problem. Now, you can do peaceful protests without looting, but it's really important that we not suppress the peaceful protest, which is trying to stop this really urgent problem, the problem of violence and racially discriminatory policing, because of a few people who have gone and taken advantage of it to engage in property damage. And that's the essence of what we were trying to get across through these cases.
There have been examples of curfews being imposed in the past. I know 1992, obviously the LA riots, there were many days of violence, fires being lit, South Central pretty much destroyed, and some other neighborhoods too. So it was beyond the ability of the police to control. I mean, do you think it was wrong in that case to impose curfews?
Yeah, I mean, actually, the courts did uphold, in some contexts, the curfews that were, the curfew that was imposed in 1992. But the amount of violence and property damage was so much more vast.
Explain that a little bit. The courts, is it the United States Supreme Court? Were there appeals? Has the High Court ever handed down a decision on the constitutionality of curfews?
Yeah. So the 1992 curfew was challenged in a case called, I believe it's In Re Juan, in California, in the California courts, and it was ultimately upheld. Definitely, the courts have said that curfews are permissible if you have an amount of violence or imminent violence or extensive property damage that the police are unable to control it through the normal means. But the strong default is that you punish people after they've committed the crime and don't suppress lots of lawful speech.
Ahilan Arulananthum, I appreciate it. Senior Counsel for the ACLU of Southern California. Thanks for coming on today.
Yeah, thanks very much for having me.
Moving on now with Greater LA on KCRW, I'm Steve Chiotakis. As we wrap up the show today, let's go off to a garage, a tiny, tiny garage back behind a small yellow house located south of Exposition Park, just west of the Harbor Freeway. A few cars parked on the street conceal that house. You walk through the white iron rod gate, down the driveway, under a tree. There's no sign. It's like the garage is hiding something. Well, it actually is. It's hiding a barbershop. Hair salons are open now in LA County after more than 2 months closed to protect public health during the COVID-19 pandemic. But that buzzing sound you're hearing, it was recorded last week when haircuts were illicit.
A lot of people ask me, if I'm afraid. I mean, I'm afraid, don't get me wrong, but being afraid don't feed me, you know? Being afraid doesn't pay the bills. Being afraid is not going to put food on my table.
That's Angel Picazzo, a South Central barber. He spent most of the past 2 months cutting hair in that garage. And even with brick-and-mortar barbershops opening up, he's staying put. A true work-from-home lifestyle. KCRW's Angel Carrera spent a day with the barber in South Central in an effort to trim some of the bad news of the day.
Angel, great name by the way, is a big dude, covered hand to head in tattoos. He's a little quiet too. It's a little intimidating at first. But he's a big teddy bear. Sorry, Angel. And like most Angelenos during COVID-19, he's just trying to make some money and take care of his. But money, that's something Angel wasn't great with when all this went down.
I wasn't ready. I'm not the type of person that saves money, you know? I'm not the person that holds money back. I'm the person that likes to spend. I like to go out. I like to spoil my lady, be ready for my baby.
That's right. He and his wife have a baby girl on the way, due any minute now. When the barbershop Angel worked at closed in March, he got a job with delivery company OnTrack to keep the money coming in. His wife kept him company on those deliveries, and that worked out okay for a couple days, but then...
I had a package on this house, and then there was another one across the street. And her being pregnant, I always tell her, like, I'll get off and go leave the packages.
He jokingly said she got terca, stubborn, and wanted to help. They split up some packages.
Once I came back, a white lady was outside, like, hey, the lady with the packages... Is she with you? And I'm like, yeah, why? She's like, oh, she fell. So my first thing in my head, it was like my daughter. Mm. You know, like she probably hurt my daughter.
Yeah.
I ran towards the back. She had a broken ankle. Nikki, did she hit your stomach? She's like, no. These are my feet, or though. My leg. And I'm like, hey, that is broken. You know, I told her that is broken.
Her ankle was broken. The baby turned out to be okay, thankfully, but he didn't want to keep making deliveries, obviously. So how to make money? That kid's gonna need stuff. He and his wife will too. So Angel decided to go back to what he knew best.
I'ma cut.
Yeah.
You know, I'ma cut and I'ma cut at home.
Yeah. And he took his gold-coated clippers, his clientele, and he headed for his garage. There, he could make money and also stay close to his wife and soon daughter. If they needed something, he's there. He took a gamble, and it paid off.
It was crazy because everybody needed a haircut, so they started hitting me up. Like, hey, I need a cut. So it was getting super wild. It was like people calling me often to get a haircut. So I'm like, I'm going to give me a board. I'm going to set up appointments. So I was using a regular kitchen chair in the little apartment right there. I bought a Home Depot table. I had my stuff set up right there.
It helps that he already had a growing Instagram presence, so it wasn't hard to get the word out. And another part of the smooth transition, positive word of mouth. And it's because Angel's just... kind of fun to be around. He donates to charity, could shoot the breeze with anyone, a shy teenager, a dude selling illegal fireworks, and even people that should have been citing him or shutting him down.
There's only two reasons if a police officer steps inside this door, you know, it's either to get a haircut or it's either to fine me. But the cops that had showed up is to get a haircut. So I'm not really worried about that.
Yep, cops.
I got several cops that come and get a haircut with me, man. I got several of them, and they tell me, hey, like, don't worry, you know, like, in the academy, like, in our office, like, they require us to have a haircut. And our answer is, like, how are we going to get a haircut if the shops are closed? Oh, it doesn't matter to me. Like, you guys got to have a haircut. So I probably have the farthest police officer that has come. It's from Oceanside. Yeah, he's from Oceanside, and he comes once a week to get a haircut. Yeah, I got probably like three cops that come and get a haircut by me.
And for an undocumented man from Jalisco, he takes a big risk with one client.
I got an officer that works for ICE.
Angel doesn't hold the immigration agent's job against him.
He's more, how can you say, he's more humble, you know? Yeah. And that type of way that you got to understand why he decided to do it, you know?
Business really took off when he started cutting hair for musicians.
I cut plenty of Mexican banda celebrities, and then they'll post me. And once they post me, like, people started following me. And then another grupación will add me. And then, like, oh, okay, you know, I seen that you cut this guy. Can you come cut us up? I will go to the hotel. They'll post stories, tag me, and then next thing you know, more people started adding me.
Regardless of whoever hair he's cutting, he doesn't overprice. $20 a pop. Keeps the whiteboard on his garage wall busy from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. And Angel didn't price gouge like some barbers he'd seen. Here's his take on that from Instagram.
I know I'm going to get a lot of hate towards this video today. I don't know why, but I got a feeling. But I just wanted to do this quick video. Barbers, don't take advantage of this quarantine, bro, and try to charge $60, $50 a haircut, bro. That's one. I seen a post where this barber tried to charge $140 for a haircut just because he wanted to do a house call. I mean, it's cool, but tampoco no te aproveches, my boy. That's the second of all. And third of all, don't forget where you're coming from, homie.
He explains a bit more.
You know, I don't forget where I come from. I I come from a broke home, single mother. She did the most to keep me happy, you know?
He says she raised him right.
A lot of people lost their job, bro. A lot. I know a lot. I know a lot that lost their jobs, and it's like they can't afford not even a gallon of milk sometimes, you know? So all that takes me back to my childhood. So it's like I charge what I charge, and people, they still keep coming back, man. Like I said it on the video, I'd rather charge what I charge and keep a busy board, you know, than charge 150, 160 bucks for a haircut and just have one customer a day.
Angel makes it a point to protect his community with low prices. But how do you keep customers safe from COVID-19? How do you keep yourself safe? That's a lot of foot traffic coming into Angel's garage, a lot of bodies, potential vectors of transmission. Angel says he sanitizes everything between customers and wears a mask. And he trusts his customers to protect him and each other.
I don't think a customer with the virus will put anybody else's life at risk, you know? I don't think they would come and sit in my chair and be like, hey, you know what? I got the virus, but I need a haircut. Like, why are you going to need a haircut when you got the virus?
I pointed out to Angel that just because people aren't coughing or walking into the garage with a collapsed lung doesn't mean they don't have COVID-19.
This has always been my belief, man. If God calls your name, he's going to call it either today, tomorrow, or the day after tomorrow. You know, if I walk outside and I got ran over, that's it. I died, but I didn't die because of the virus.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many different ways to die.
Gotcha.
And today is not my day.
He wears the bravado well, you know, but so, I keep pressing.
Honestly, I'm worried, man. I'm worried about the virus, and I'm worried about somebody stepping in that door and be contagious, and then especially with my baby on the way that she's almost due. But like I told you, man, if God calls your name, he's gonna call it no matter what you do, you know?
Now that barbershops are open, you might think Angel would be relieved to come out of hiding, but
for now, till everything goes back to normal, I think I'm gonna be in the garage.
For KCRW, I'm Angel Carreras.